What a long, strange trip it's been for the Fed's extraordinary stimulus. From APM in New York, I'm David Brancaccio with the Marketplace Midday Update. We've all been part of a great lab experiment. What happens when our central bankers keep buying loads of bonds to stimulate the economy? The experiment is entering a new phase now. How does the Fed extricate the economy now that some parts of it seem addicted to the stimulus? With the guardians of stimulus and interest rates at the Federal Reserve meeting this week, we turn for some context to economist Philip Swagel at the School of Public Policy at the University of Maryland. Good morning, Phil.
Hi, David. Good morning.
So the Fed meets tomorrow. What will you be looking for?
I'll be looking for whether they taper. I don't expect them to announce the end of their bond purchases just yet. Everyone understands that the economy has picked up. The real question is whether they think it's sustainable and how much more progress they think they can make on the labor market if they continue the bond purchases just a little bit longer.
Because the unemployment rate as well as the payroll figures came in quite strong last time around, but it's possible it's an artifact, and the Fed will be wrestling with that.
The labor market has definitely improved, right? So a 7% unemployment rate and 200 or 250,000 jobs per month are good, but by the standards of a normal recovery, they're still not very good, and the long-term unemployment situation is still extremely difficult. And I think the Fed will want to do more to fix that situation.
Now, I think this is Ben Bernanke's last week of running the Fed, right?
No. Chairman Bernanke is still chairman until the end of January. So I think Chairman Bernanke would like to start the taper now. He'd like to take that first step back toward a normalized monetary policy. But he can do it at the end of January, and it would still be on his watch.
Philip Swagel at the University of Maryland also served as senior economist, then chief of staff for the President's Council of Economic Advisors. Phil, thank you.
Great. Thanks very much.
Later this week, Facebook joins an elite club. The social media giant will become part of the Standard & Poor's 500 Index that you hear about on the radio just about every hour. Marketplace's Amy Scott has more.
In some ways, joining the S&P 500 is a symbolic achievement. Facebook's share price will now be reflected in one of the most widely followed measures of the stock market.
It means the company has arrived. It means that it's one of the 500 largest companies by market value in the United States.
Finance professor James Angel of Georgetown University says it also means more investors will buy the stock. That's because of mutual funds that try to match the returns of an index like the S&P. Internet analyst Tom Forte is with Telsey Advisory Group.
Those index funds will now have a portion devoted to shares of Facebook. So if you think of it loosely in kind of a supply-demand framework, demand for shares of Facebook has gone up.
That's why Facebook's stock rose on the news and likely will again when it officially joins the index. But back to symbolism, Forte says the debut also represents a coming of age of social networking stocks. There are now three big-time market players, Facebook, Twitter, and LinkedIn. I'm Amy Scott for Marketplace.
Marketplace is listener-supported. I know that just goes in one ear and out the other, but it means it is supported by listeners like you. So to keep our coverage compelling, up to date, up to the minute, if you can, make a tax-deductible gift to Marketplace today. Your gift in any amount will support your daily dose of business insight from us. Help us keep you up to date and well-informed wherever you are. You can donate by going to marketplace.org by the end of the year, December 31st. Thanks. Some years ago, David Bowie sold Bowie bonds. Investors gave the rock star money in return for a cut of the future royalties on his music. Now young people just starting out can do something like this. There's a company called Pave that lets financial backers invest in the future of promising young adults. If their careers take off, the investors get a cut of their success. Sal LaHood is co-founder and CEO of Pave. Thanks for coming in.
Thank you for having us.
Now, explain the model a little bit here. Investors buy stock in young people?
Pave's trying to democratize access to funding for young people. Young people come to the platform and try to find individual backers who invest in them. The way that happens is through an agreement that we've pioneered where someone receives funding and payments are linked to income so that you only pay when you earn.
So a lot of people will hear this and say, gee, I wonder how this compares to essentially taking out a loan from a bank to fund often your student loans, but maybe just your launch into the world?
First of all, the structural differences. If things go badly when you take a loan, you still have to pay the loan. This is different. There's a trade-off. You're not taking the risk if things don't go well. And in exchange for that, people are going to do better if you succeed because payments are linked to income.
From the investor's point of view, how can they be assured that they're not entering into a relationship with someone who's really a deadbeat, who wants to take their money and they'll not make any money after graduation and therefore, legally, according to the contracts that you've drawn up, wouldn't have to pay the money back?
We try to be agnostic to the type of career or the type of background someone has, and we verify everything that is verifiable. We leave it to backers to decide what they're interested in investing in, and I think it's really up to you, and that's one of the advantages. We are in the zeitgeist of people wanting to do much more with their money than just make a profit.
But it's not so indentured servitude. I mean, you're an hawk to a human being.
You have to define things in the sense that what financial liability makes you take a decision you otherwise wouldn't take. Loans do, because whatever happens, you have to pay that loan back. This is liberating because you're only paying if you do well. And I think, you know, as with everything that is new, there's always going to be a discussion. But we really think this is a real model that should exist at a very wide scale for society.
The company is called PAVE, P-A-V-E. Sal LaHood is co-founder and CEO. Mr. LaHood, thank you.
Thank you very much.
And riddle me this. Why is Amazon like the stock exchange? Because its prices are changing nearly all the time. A retail research firm called Profitero has been keeping tabs on Amazon and reports the massive online retailer changes its prices 2.5 million times a day. Compare that to Walmart or Best Buy online, which tweaked their prices just 50,000 times in all of November. In New York, I'm David Brancaccio with the Marketplace Midday Update from APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.